We have left off, says Elon Musk.
Elon Musk is, he's doing his thing. Now, we have gone transatlantic because I saw a article in Forbes where one of the most trendy or sought after distilleries was one in upstate New York. So Justin, because Justin's very good at this kind of thing, got in touch with the owner who has now joined us. And Forbes said that your distillery or your whiskey was one to look out for. Benjamin Tarabello, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Martin?
I'm tickety-boo, I suppose, is the way to do it. Although I actually have a little bit of a cold. So if I get a little bit croaky, do forgive me. So I'll get to your backstory a little bit, because there's a bit of an unusual backstory to yourself. How's things going for you? How's the distillery running? How's the whiskey scene in New York State?
So it's like, I'm sure across the globe, people love the experimentation, seeing the differences. And, you know, that's what we cater to. People are more and more pushing local, more and more pushing for smaller distillates, different flavors, you know, not just different flavors, but different ages and stuff. And that's where we cater to very much. We laser are focused on that. Like even in my background over here, it's kind of a little tour room. We see little whiskey stills over there. Uh-huh. I'm hyper.
Oh, yep. See that?
Right over there. Yeah. So I'm very much, and I guess that's, I'm hyper focused on the little, on the small details, creating something unique, something different, the conversation, the education. I love it. I love when I get someone coming into here. This is actually a small little distillery. It's called Exquisite Sip. It's not, you know, mass manufacturing. It has licenses. It's located in my house in Passaic. It can make about a gallon a day. But bringing people in, educating them, showing them what we do, and it really highlights what I do for the Tarabello brand. Those unique finishes, experimentation. It's not just about taking bourbon and putting it into a rum cask. It's about understanding the bourbon profile and understanding on how you're going to match it with a finishing barrel, be it here's a tequila finish or whichever barrel we have in inventory, making sure that there's a proper match, a proper fitting, that the end result will be something fantastic.
Yeah. Now, it's always said that it's easier to sort of turn a rowing boat than it is the Titanic. So you're able to experiment and do little differences and all these different things that you want to do. How did you get started in whiskey? Because your background's not in whiskey. Your background's in a whole different tangent. So tell us.
That's definitely true.
How did you get started?
So I am a curious individual. I am an ordained rabbi. I've published multiple works in Jewish law. I just can't, you know, I can't stop my curiosity. One day, my grandfather bought a beer brewing kit and presented it to a cousin of mine. Now, I guess I was very jealous. I was 14 years old, and I wanted beer, and they didn't invite me for some.
Uh-oh.
And I bought the kit. I found a place to buy it. We had it on 75% off. It was after the holidays on clearance, and I made the beer, and then once I went to the beer store, you could buy it. I found a place called I think it was called Brewer's Apprentice. I convinced a cousin of mine to drive me over, as I couldn't drive. I was underage. I purchased probably about 100 pounds of ground corn.
Uh-huh.
Was shaking like a leaf because no one's making 100 pounds of ground beer from corn. It doesn't work.
Okay.
I actually paid for it. I believe it was my dad gave me his credit card, so that was another strike. It didn't have my name on it, but don't bother checking. I brought it home. I made this stuff. I think the next time around, I actually asked the guy behind the counter, like I was feeling so self-conscious. I'm like, don't you realize what I'm buying this for? I mean, you didn't ask me if I'm underage. Corn is not really used for making beer or mead.
Nope.
Aren't you like a little curious? Can I ask? So, What's the problem with selling corn? I'm not selling you alcohol. You don't have to be 21. I'm like, okay.
Because America's quite strict about this, about buying alcohol under 21. But are you legally allowed to make it if you're under 21? I suppose there's no law to stop you.
I mean, I don't see why not. It's funny because during the Prohibition era, you couldn't sell, and you would actually buy big bundles of grapes. And yep. On the bundles of grapes, there was a string around with a yeast pack that said, it is illegal to combine the yeast with the grapes. And have them submerged. That's basically what transpired.
Yep, they basically give you instructions. You're not allowed to do this, 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 and this to make wine. So please don't do it. And they sold millions of those kits. And then they banned that as well, didn't they? So you're a 14-year-old kid. You've been making your beer. Okay, was it good? Was it good beer?
Look, I thought the beer was delicious. I gifted the beer to a whole bunch of people. And, you know, when you make beer yourself, if it's in the wrong temperatures, it gets over carbonated. And apparently the reviews were, I tried to open it and I got shot in the face. Was this like an April Fool's Day prank?
Right. Okay.
So your career as a brewer, let's just say, sort of stalled a bit, did it? It sort of stalled. Then what did you decide to do?
So I upgraded from beer after doing research to distilling, which was when I purchased all that corn, because I found my research that when you distill, it's less likely there'll be a problem because the aging done right will actually iron out a lot of those, you know, hiccups.
Yeah.
There's no fermentation in the bottle. So it's safer to get the rave reviews if I actually did the distilling, went through the distilling process that I wanted. And the validation that it wanted, yeah. As opposed to creating a beer, which people have their favorite beer, be it Corona or whatever it is,
yeah.
And a light beer, and not appreciating the fact that you put in nutmeg, orange, orange peels, cinnamon, yeah. etc., because that's not what they used to.
Yeah. So you decided distilling was for you. Now, at what point was the rabbi training coming in here? Because I want to train to be a rabbi, but I also I'm in the background. I'm making up moonshiner.
I reckon it was saints and sinners. You see, he sort of realized, and then he was going to repent or something like that. There.
So it's actually very interesting because I never really did one over the other. Just 2 weeks ago, I was in the biggest university, I would say. More just short of the numbers, the college it's called Beth Medrash Gavoa in Lakewood, 8,000 students. And I gave a class on distilling and understanding it in regards to kosher consumption, when you need to have kosher certification or not. So they called me up and said, hey, we want to learn this topic. It's actually on YouTube. So I kind of straddle both worlds. I try to bring the best of both and serve it to each other. I'll bring the rabbi here and the whiskey here. I don't know if the headmaster, the chief rabbi of the school would have appreciated if you saw how everyone left my class a little tipsy, but that's how I kind of operate.
Put like this, I see no conflict of interests here. I'm not as well versed on kosher food laws as yourself, I'm sure, but I don't really see why would it matter? Why would that be a problem?
Correct.
Now, so do your distilling, for you, so it's about barrel aging, or is it about the product? How do you? What's your method for doing stuff? What's your methodology of your finished product?
So I approached it first making an ordinary bourbon, but I'm a very quiet individual. So,
okay.
So I said, I'm not looking to make a bourbon that's going to make me stand out. So let's do something extraordinary. And I did a lot of research on different finishings that are on the market. And what's an impediment from saying, taking a bourbon and putting in a tequila cask and this cask, that cask, because at that time I was actually researching the porous nature of wood. I was kind of obsessed with it and how the alcohol would eat away at the wood. The differences between the sherry interaction with the wood, and all of that. I said, why don't we just start this whole new category, this whole new style of finishing, given that there were, you know, already in the market, obviously, sherry is a standard, so is a port, so is a rum, but why isn't this across the board? Why don't we just start designing whiskeys, playing around finishing, which also fed into my ADHD nature of jumping from thing to thing. Mm-hmm. So I would study one and I'd take it, go to the next, and then I could come back and finish the first one. And then I'll go and look at the wine and say, hey, the rum cask finished within 90 days of finishing, gave it those taste. The wine doesn't have it. Let me research why. Wine, oh, wine's more of a fruit, well, the breakdown you would want to finish for a year. So it really gave me a lot to keep me busy, you know, being involved and researching, as opposed to having just being busy tinkering with a whiskey still, or being busy with, you know, the same process over and over and over. I just love the concept of just switching from one thing to the next.
And what everybody has a sort of style of whiskey that they like. Before you actually got into doing the distilling, what style of whiskies did you like yourself? PD, sherry, you know, heavy for sherry bomb, that kind of thing.
The one Dad left out in the counter without realizing. I mean, that's how young I was.
Fair enough.
These are very honest answers. Ben.
Vodka was great. You were pouring water. No one noticed. I mean,
oh yeah. Well, vodka masked a lot of things. A lot of things when you were younger. You know. But is it bourbon? Was it sort of Tennessee whiskeys? Were you interested in the sort of production way of they were being made, or the flavor or taste? What was it that actually excited you about those?
The manufacturing process. Actually, the way it was made, understanding the differences in the height of a gooseneck, the height of a pot still versus this, you know, every still. Like, I get hung up on details. Like, even, for example, Macallan, the fact that they use Golden Harvest barley, they're using a different barley, mm-hmm. is something that totally intrigues me and fascinates me. Yeah. And every the little nuances are more what intrigues me than, I mean, obviously taste is going to be a big factor, but I'm the nut that goes into the store and is going to buy the bottle that's been there for years, because not because it's a good whiskey, it tastes horrible, but I just have to see on how it aged. And well, it's from that climate, and they use the Missouri oak, or they use which oak, which is the wider grains and that, the closer together grains, you know, on the wood. How did that react to the heat of Texas?
Yeah,
and everyone wrote reviews that taste terrible or whatever. But what? How did it get there? That's what fascinates me.
Yeah. Funny enough, that's what Marty does. Marty loves buying old bottles that have been sitting on the shelves in stores for years.
And for me, it's a slightly different thing, because I think the stuff that has been made 60 years ago, all the distilleries say, we've been making this product since 1741 or whatever it is, and we've always made it the same way. You can't make it the same way, because the production methods is used today, the types of barley that's used today, the safety standards that are in place today weren't in place 50 years ago or 100 years ago. So everything changes, and it just sort of flavor drifts. So when I buy at auction a whiskey from the 1950s or 60s, I know they can't really recreate that, or it's very difficult to recreate what they had then, you know. So I like doing that. So it's a slightly different, I think we're both doing the same thing, but from a slightly different angle, you know.
I agree. I can't replicate the moonshine no matter how much I try.
Yeah. No, just, moonshine. Just,
there was no safety features.
No, you're not. Moonshine and back in the day. Moonshine, we'll touch on this, because moonshine, it's kind of in your DNA, I'm led to believe. Is this true?
Yeah, so it's actually interesting, because of my profile on LinkedIn, I had a relative reach out and say, hey, your grandfather's grandfather was actually making when they lived in Belarus, you know,
Eastern Europe.
Moonshine, bootlegging. My grandfather didn't know that his grandfather was making, but my grandfather's cousin telling me, Grandpa Trayson was making moonshine. I know my grandfather did. We have the video on YouTube during Prohibition. He used to fill up the baby carriage And they used to push it like that because no cop would stop a baby carriage to see how the baby's doing. Right. And it says, worst case, the baby's sleeping. Don't wake the baby up. All right. Don't poke around.
So you have a background, shall we say, in distilling. So was that your family from Belarus? They came to the States. And did they carry that over with them by any chance?
So I really just found this out 2 weeks ago. That wasn't just my grandfather 3 weeks ago. I got this image of this really saintly looking rabbi with the caption bootlegger on LinkedIn. I'm like, who are you? What are you? He's like, well, I'm your grandfather's cousin. And we're going to be meeting up by a 90th birthday of a shared cousin. And so even though we probably haven't spoken in about 50 years, I decided to see if there's any Tarabellas on LinkedIn that I know. Uh-huh. And here you are making whiskey. So I figured I'll share a picture of our mutual six, you know, whatever, grandfather's grandfather, who bootlegged. So I don't know much. I know how he looks, the one picture, and I got to figure it out. But this was like breaking news.
Oh, I can see you getting all excited about this. Yay! It's back. It's in the blood. It's in the blood. Now, yeah, I'm going to crack open a whiskey. I don't have any of your whiskey because you haven't sent us over any yet. But this is a Talnua, and I've got a wee lamb on it. It's got a ram on it, and I thought that the horn looks like a prayer horn.
Yes.
So I'm going to open this. It's an American pot still whiskey, so it's from your side of the pond. Oh, so I've never had this before. I bought it at an auction the other day. So yeah. So how's things going for you? To get a recommendation from
I can't let you drink alone.
No, Justin lets me drink alone all the time. So he does.
I can't drink at the moment because I'm on more antibiotics for a sort of abscess or something like that there. And if I have it, I just feel like.
All right. Okay. Excuses. No. Slánchan.
Cheers.
No. What was I going to say? All right, so how did Forbes pick you up? Forbes magazine's a big publication. So are you available across a wide range, or how did they hear about you? Because that's a big accolade, it's a big promotion.
So I would say simply because I'm very active on social media. I'm doing unique finishes. I happen to make a whiskey that's 100% corn, so I don't have any Passover issues. I am a rabbi, and it was an intriguing story. And I kind of, again, if you want to have your shot at this one, the answer, I ask. I run a very tight ship, don't got a lot of money. I have a passion for what I do, and I say, here I am. Please. Let's go. Write an article. I got the story. Write the article.
Yeah.
That's what it was. They took a drink of it and like, you got the spirit too. No pun intended.
Yeah. So you're in upstate New York. Now you're in Utica. Is that how you pronounce it? Utica?
Utica, yes.
Utica. I looked up famous people from Utica because obviously I do a little bit of digging around. Probably the most famous person from there is the school inspector in The Simpsons. That's where he's supposedly from. That's Inspector Chalmers in The Simpsons apparently comes from there, which I thought was quite funny. But so you have a number of different whiskies available. So talk us through what they are.
So I actually have six finishes, and one that's not finished a 7 year. Early on when I did this, when I had a standard 7 year finish, I came across the very simple fact that a bourbon's, no matter how much of your heart goes into the bourbon, and no matter how much you love producing a whiskey, and no matter how awesome you think it is, it's much harder if you don't, if there's no way to differentiate and to sell that message and how delicious your bourbon is so much energy and so much passion that I went back to the books and I said, what is there that I'm missing? And I came across my first rum cask finish. I think it was a Scotch. I'm not going to say any names. I said, you know, this is actually, I will say some names. I remember where I was. I was by my old landlord. He invited me up for the Sabbath student meal. And he says, I got this whiskey you have to try. It's Belvini 14 Caribbean cask finish.
Yep, very nice.
And, you know, yes, it was delicious. I said, this is something. If he's holding it like the way he's holding it and proud to present it to me and drink it, this is something I don't. I not only want to emulate, I want to make it so much better, so much more unique, and I want to take it to a whole new league. Mm-hmm. And with that, out came, you know, after the Sabbath was over, out came Google, and I started researching. And I researched every type of cask, Martinique, Jamaican, you know, from all the different countries. What are the unique, different makeups, different rums? And it was a whole new industry, rum, because rum, there's not, the laws from island to island are different.
Yeah.
Every single detail is different. And I settled on the Jamaican rum cask because I felt that one would stand out. And I won't say I didn't experiment with the other ones. I did. But the Jamaican rum cask, the reason why I initially picked that profile is because a cask is like 40 years old. They put in certain, I think it has like a banana smell. They put in chips and they put in certain flavors before they fill it, mm-hmm. which gives it a very rich rum, sweet rum finish.
Yeah.
And that's what I settled on, the Jamaican rum cask. And that was my first finishing. And that one was, it flies off the shelves. From there, I advanced a little slower.
Just before you go on the Jamaican rum, the casks that you use are really good quality casks, the Jamaican rum, because they're 40-year-old Jamaican rum casks. I'm correct in that, aren't I?
Yeah, they're very old. It's funny because I actually built a sukkah that's a hut by one of the holiday seasons. So I took apart the barrels. I think the pictures are still online in multiple places, and I tried to drill a screw into it. And the wood was so saturated and eaten up by the alcohol, it couldn't hold the screw. I just was like, drill it. It was just full out. So yeah. I had to take apart newer barrels. That's what it is. It's 40 years old.
It's named after a Jewish pirate. What's the story there? I've wrote this down. Blauvelt? Is that the name of the pirate?
Correct. Yes, Abraham Blauvelt. So, the details behind that is I do everything myself. I call up the TTP that's in charge of label regulations. I'm like, why was this label rejected? I mean, I spent hours figuring. And they tell me that when you do a unique finishing, it has to have what's called a name. There's some name to it, the same legal term to it. And I'm like, what am I naming a Jamaican rum cask, being a rabbi? What can I come out creative? You know, the capital, that's kind of boring.
Yeah.
So I Googled Jewish pirates. What could, you know, it's rum. And I popped up Abraham Blauvelt. And I read about him, fascinating individual, histories, fascinating. I said, this is someone that I would put on the bottle. And that's what I did. I mean, the history that he became a pirate because he's angry at the Spandarines, because the Spandarines exiled him from Spain during the Inquisition. So he did this in order to take revenge. This was a lot of history, you know, a lot of self-righteousness over there. It was fascinating.
I could just see you on a Monday morning. I've been rejected by the fun police have rejected me. Right, I need a name. Jewish pirate. I'll be pops.
I remember I was in the kids' room, one knee on the bed, looking out the window on the phone, arguing with them. And I argued, just perplexed. What do you want from me? I'm just trying to make a living. And
I've seen some rare labeling from what they've accepted and what they reject. I keep talking to people, and it's just, I think they just flip a coin and go, we'll make his life a bit of a pain today. But yeah.
I'll show you something fascinating.
Go ahead.
This one says New York bourbon whiskey finished in mezcal casks. This one says on it, New York bourbon whiskey finished in tequila barrels.
Okay.
Can you explain to me why when I call them out, I said, look, I need consistency in brand. So, and you know, labels on the shelf, why did you mandate a change over here from casks, which I think is a little better terminology than a barrel,
yeah,
tequila, finishing tequila cask, they mandated a change it to barrels, the language on the label, because you approve this one to say casks, this one you don't approve. And they're like, sorry, you got to change it. I said, okay, listen, just let's get this through. I got to make some sales.
I can answer. It's empire building within the federal bureaucracy.
Aye. It's bullshit is what it is. Let's just call it what it is. It's just bullshit. So you have
I do have to give credit to the TTP agents. They happen to be fantastically pleasant. They're nice.
Yeah.
Some back laws are stuck with, but it comes out very funny because they probably do have somewhere, because it's coming from Mexico, that in Mexico, the Google translated this as casks and this as barrels, so they were stuck. But it's just humorous.
Here, listen, you're trying to just sort of blame Sergey and Brin on it. You're trying to blame Sergey and Brin now. You're trying to pass the buck. Zuckerberg gets us all the time. Zuckerberg got us once for nudity. Do you know that? And we keep our clothes on at all times.
Yes. It's a very strict thing I have. Justin's not allowed to strip off at any point during the show. No. But we got banned one time for nudity. I ended up on the phone to a guy in Malaysia to try and get everything sorted out. It was ridiculous. Just ridiculous. But anyway, we'll get back to the whiskey, folks. Stop giving off about governing bodies. So you've your 7-year-old straight bourbon. Then you've got the Blauvelt Jamaican rum cask. Next up, what is the next one? Mm-hmm.
There's the mezcal finish, and the tequila finish.
So the mezcal, the mezcal's called Leon.
Correct, as a lion.
Leon, as in Leon the lion. Why did you pick that?
So again, it was the same conversation. I was making small talk with the federal agent as I Googled what, you know, it's orange, and I was Googling. Mezcal is obviously the whole Mexico. Mm-hmm. Mexico is desert. Leon means lion. The one that wrote the Zohar is Moshe de Leon, which is a lion. He was Spanish. The first settlers of Mexico were Spanish. Some claim that they were relatives. I'm like, desert red, desert orange, lion, Zohar. This is great mix. Off you go. Here's your name.
That's the name.
And you must have saved a fortune on product branding agencies. You must have saved a fortune. You just did it all yourself. But they're really catchy names.
Okay, thank you.
And then your tequila cask finish is called Jaguar.
That was after much struggle. Just the national animal of Mexico, I believe, is a jaguar. So that was kind of easy because tequila is their pride and glory.
Yep.
The blue waves, all the whiskeys aged to classical music. The wave color was just, just went with it, which I say. My wife thought the symmetrical different colors would stand out nicely on the shelf.
Right. You just touched on something I wanted to bring up. You age your whiskey in the casks, being played classical music to it 24/7, correct?
Correct.
Can you tell two things? One, why? And two, what? Because is it like Paganini or Beethoven, Bach or Chopin? Fill us in. Tell me, because this is a bit off the wall.
So when you char a barrel, let's get back to the barrel of the cask. Mm-hmm. There's different levels of char, different intensities of fire. But the idea is when you do put in the fire, there's going to be levels and depth that the fire reaches, the heat reaches, the toast reaches.
Yeah.
And you want to extract from the barrels up to a certain point of a few millimeters, whatever it is, and not more than that.
Yeah.
That's the first step. The second step is you want with movement comes evaporation, molecular movement. And with age in a whiskey barrel, without music for a second, there will be the evaporation of the heads, which is the lower. The heads is evaporates at a lower temperature, and that is really what gives you the hangover. So the idea of the music was to accomplish two things: the evaporation of the heads to extract from the oak at the same time the flavors that you want, but not to give it an oaky flavor. So for that, I turned to my grandfather, who is a passionate classical music enthusiast, and he put together a list. I do know that his list was vetted by I had someone in the distillery who removed some of the songs. I think it was Wagner, as he was he hated Jews, so he felt that he didn't want to have to drink whiskeys that Jews hate.
Yeah,
that's like when tour guides come in and they're like, "What are you doing here?" And I'm like, "Look, Grants made this music list. If you have a problem, you could edit it." I tell him I need soft classical music. I don't know classical music. And that's the story.
So you think that there is a science to this. That's what you're saying. You're trying to say that science to this.
Soft.
Mm-hmm. Soft, subtle, relaxing, settle the thing down, you know, let it caress and thing.
Yes.
So what do you play? What is on the playlist?
So I know Beethoven's there, there's some Mozart, there's some, every once in a while a commercial comes up. So if you go to the distillery in the morning at 5:30 in the morning, you might hear voices and like, I think someone broke in and had a few drinks. But it goes, it's a loop round and round and round. So as I say, it's a good thing you go home at night because otherwise your brain will freeze from all that.
Yeah.
So I'm not a classical music enthusiast.
Have you done a comparison stuff? It's a predominant, you know, have you tried various types of music or various styles of music or very different thing to see what influence it has? Or is it just really the vibration? Is that really what you're trying to say?
I believe it's all the vibration. There are wineries that do it. And obviously the tempo and everything does make a difference because you have to worry about depth of the oak that it travels to. You don't want an oaky flavor. And you want the vibration. There's wineries that do it. There are distilleries actually that play heavy rock, very heavy metal.
And Metallica do it. Metallica do it on theirs.
Yes,
Blacking. That's all. I know that they do it. And I tried that Blacking. Pretty good stuff. It's spot on. So it has.
But did it give you a hangover?
I don't tend to get hangovers very much, Benjamin. If I'm honest,
Irishman.
I always thought if I ever start suffering from hangovers, that's the day you stop drinking. If I'm honest, because you know the pros will be outweighed by the cons at that stage. But but it was very pleasant. It was very pleasant, I have to say. So if a tour guide comes in to your distillery, out comes. You know, Mozart's playing out over the thing. How big's your warehouse? How big is it a Rick style, or you know, what way do you palletize it or whatever?
So most of it's in the basement, and it's the basement. It's just rows in the basement, barrels all over the place, lines of what's under bond, what's not under bond, and that's what it is. It's not like when you walk into some of these warehouses with like hundreds of barrels and stuff. It's just you'll see three rows of barrels up, and four of those, and then behind me is a whole, you know, opposite from where I am in the picture, a whole bunch of odd barrels from mezcal to tequila to rum to whatever.
Yeah,
and that's what there is.
And what what's your next? Casking. What new casks are you want to be doing? Or are you not late?
So I have right now a Pinot Noir finish that I have to bottle, and I have a Cabernet. Now both of them are barrels I picked up myself, threw them in the back of my truck. Not very wise, by the way, because they were heavy. I drove them up to the distillery. They were all both kosher. I filled them, and they were freshly emptied. Literally, the winery emptied them, and I filled them up. Like within hours, so the wine was not, you know, full of sulfites or anything, and I'm waiting to see what it'll taste like. I bottled one, it's the Cabernet finish. I tried to submit it to the TTB for approval of the label. They said they're not allowed to put in the type of wine, so I had to take off Cabernet. I tried to put something of wine on it to tell people, hey, you know, so I think it says a wine cast finish on it. And then I tried to name it in Hebrew, use a Hebrew name, Yayin. because you have to give it that name, the vanity name. And they caught me on that, so I went to the
helmet. And I'd like to be a cask or a barrel. Does it have to be a barrique, or what are they going to tell you to put on it now?
So I went to the Talmud and I took a Talmudic term for what wine is, and I used that as the name. Got away with it. They weren't well versed.
Okay.
Very good. So I imagine driving up with the two casks in the back of the car. Law enforcement might have had something to say to that. If did you have a seatbelt around them?
No jokes, but hey, you know, I've had so many of these ones. I'm like, if the officer will pull me over after any of these deliveries, they can give me an alcohol test, and from the fumes, I don't know what I'm going to test. It's, no,
I'm going to put myself another one. That's quite tasty, actually. I quite like this. So you've got all these products. Your website is a bit different than most people's as well, because you can sort of customize your purchases. It's not like everything's standard. You can actually customize your purchases through the website, correct?
Correct. So again, this comes into, I initially was these four whiskey bottles, and that was my, I still sell them in stores and everything, but I realized with time, and particularly in my home state, again, it's all about the ABCs. If you have a basic template that's approved by the federal government and you understand what you can move, what you can't move, and that's why you'll see when you open up the website, there's parts that you can't move and there's parts that you can move on the label. I built out like a system where we'll produce your logos, your colors on the label, and ship it to you. It's a gift. People love, you know, yeah. It's only in states where you could ship. Sometimes the guys have to come pick it up. But if you're a company and want a gift, and you order from Amazon, I know from my experience, the minute I get something from Amazon, I'm like, okay, the guy spent $50 on me. He ordered it to all his employees. Hi, yeah. I'm returning it. This was stupid. This was wonderful. I got $50 to spend. So what I changed was I have complete customization. I'll show you a little bit in the back over here. This is the New Jersey distillery. Mm-hmm. The door's closed, but I have a laser engraver over there.
Okay.
I'll laser engrave shot glasses. I'll laser engrave the boards behind me from there. Pretty much anything and everything, I'm going to do custom, and I'll focus on you and get your corporate gift out this season and get you those wows and make your clients know how much you really cared about them.
Yeah. And where do you ship to? Is it just in the U.S.? Is it to certain states, or do you ship worldwide, or? Where to?
I go wherever the law permits me to ship. That's basically the answer. It's state, by country. I actually one time filed all the paperwork to ship to one country. I got it there, and then they seized my whiskey. They said that it wasn't permitted, even though I had the paperwork. Apparently, the customs official was out of what to drink. It's just my luck.
Yeah, typical. That would be about right. I've heard of things like this before. I once sent a package to the US, and it was all full of like foods and some whiskey miniatures, and they opened it up to inspect it. It all arrived barring the whiskey miniatures. They've mysteriously, angel's share, evaporated into the sky. There's nothing you can do.
Yes.
You can't say anything.
No, you just got to pay that bill for shipping. That's it.
That's it. And hope for the best. Look, so you are in stores locally. People can buy it online, but how wide is your distribution? Is it just sort of local to the city, or all over New York State, or where?
So it's in Total Wine. It's in a lot of the big. It's in some of the chains, some of the local stores. But I love the interaction of people, and that's what my focus is on. That's why I opened up a second distillery near the city. It's Passaic is only 8 minutes from the city, because what I discovered was the hotels. For example, I'll do a hotel once for in room, something special, because again, it brings in revenue. They do the sales because people are coming into New York from around the globe and they want to take home something with them for memories. So if you put in a non-New York product, it's less likely for them to take home. You put in a New York product with shot glasses and whatnot in the box and coasters, they're going to take it home. So I'll do that. But part of that is you want the bartender or the food and beverage manager to experience. No one's coming up to Utica So what they do is they'll come to this little distillery here in Passaic. I'll give them the tour. I actually have a little cooperage in the back where we make barrels. Yeah. Just so they get the hands-on, the micro experience and interaction. And that's really where my focus is, the gifting and the interaction and building the, in a sense, ambassadorship, if you want to call it that, of goodwill throughout the market of New York.
Yeah, that's a big market it is. Because I thought this, I was talking to someone about 6 months ago. I gave a little talk and I was explaining that there's more distilleries in New York State now there is in Ireland. I mean, it's a big whiskey scene. There's a big whiskey scene out there.
Yes, yes.
And a lot of them are boutique-y, the very sort of craft the way you are. But yeah, I think what you're doing is really, really cool. Do you ship to Ireland?
I never looked up the laws. I would check right away because I want to get you a bottle or two.
Oh, no,
I want to put your name on a bottle.
Justin's face on a bottle. And that'll mean you'll get zero seals.
My face has been on a sort of like a whiskey.
Hip flask.
It's more than enough.
I don't mean more than enough.
But we'll fingers crossed if you can get one over to us, we'll get a taste of some of our people here.
But no, I'd love to try it. I'd love to try a rum cast that has been played to by Mozart, Beethoven, Chopin, all these kind of people. You know, I think it's I'm not convinced by the science. I'm not totally convinced by the science of the whole thing. But I just like a good story. I love a nice something that is done well as a sort of, even if it's gimmicky, I love it.
We have done the space whiskey before. The frequency of the music is bound to have an effect of some sort or another.
It's one of those things. But I do you have plans to open any more distilleries? Is that, you know, because you have a couple now?
I would love to. I mean, my dreams is that I bring everyone in from the entire world. Come experience it. It's an art. It's something, a passion. You're going to love it. Get it. It was buried during the Prohibition. They destroyed everything, the whole thing. Then they scare you off. You're going to die because, you know, the blind theory if you drink it from the hysterical still. Then they've used every scare tactic in the entire universe. And it's no different than being in a kitchen. Come, everyone's making coffee beans today. Everyone loves it. You know, get involved, enjoy yourself.
Absolutely.
Beer for the reason.
And what is, because you've mentioned a couple of times, what is the kosher, the sort of laws? What would make a whiskey non-kosher?
Pretty much nothing. I mean, it's very hard to have a non-kosher one.
Excellent.
the only exception is anything that is aged in a wine barrel gets more complex because wine has kosher considerations. But other than that, whiskey is never a problem.
Excellent. You see, a lot of those kosher food laws were long before whiskey was ever manufactured. So,
that's what it is.
Now, Benjamin, I really enjoyed talking to you, buddy. I love what you're doing. I think all that sort of lovely, quirky, picking stuff up that's a bit unusual, inviting everybody up, excellent stuff. And the fact that you are an ordained rabbi just makes it even sort of a little bit stranger, you know, just does. And what's not to like?
Excellent stuff.
But listen again. Take care and talk to you again soon.
Yes. Yes, I'm looking forward. Come in person one day.
Will do.
Thank you.